Jai Gurudev. Welcome to the full moon celebration for this month, sponsored by the Ultimate Flying Club. Thank you for coming despite the snow. I think you will be very happy, delighted that you make this choice, because Dr. Freund has prepared a wonderful presentation for today. This presentation is about the essence of the title of our club, the Flying Club, the Ultimate Flying Club. That refers to that moment of liftoff. Maximum brain coherence gives rise to that liftoff, and bubbling bliss is a result. And our presenter for tonight, Dr. Peter Freund, I think is a very ideal choice for this presentation, because he is a true champion of yogic flying. A very, very light yogic flyer. It's an inspiration for everyone, every siddha, young or old, to watch him going around and around our 50-meter yogic flying ring in the Golden Dome. Very inspiring, an example for everyone. Dr. Freund is an assistant professor of Maharshi Vedic Science, director of the MUM Tape Library, and director of the MUM Preparatory Purusha Program. Dr. Freund has been participating in Super Radiance in the Golden Domes continuously since February 1980, which compiles one of the top five attendance records in the Golden Dome. Dr. Freund has a bachelor's degree in philosophy from Antioch College, a master's in Vedic studies from Maharshi European Research University in Switzerland, and a PhD in Maharshi Vedic Science from Maharshi University of Management. One of Maharshi's ideals for his Vedic system of education, which is designed to create enlightenment for every student and an ideal quality of life for the whole world, is the study of the Vedic literature, in particular reading the Vedic literature in Sanskrit. And Dr. Freund, it's so moving to reflect on his great accomplishments in this field. Dr. Freund is the creator of the Vedic Reserve website, which is part of the MUM website, and it's a website where almost the entire Vedic literature is listed, and this was never the case before he created that website. And so in this way, everyone has access for free to the entire Vedic literature to participate in Maharshi's ideal system of education in this way. In addition to that, Dr. Freund is one of the foremost researchers in the world in the field of Shiksha, a branch of the Vedic literature which Maharshi has said contains the origin of yogic flying, and has published on the internet nearly 120 source texts in this field which were unpublished before, more than 30 of which he transcribed from handwritten paper and palm leaf manuscripts, which were often written in different scripts, and he transcribed them in the Devanagari script, which is an enormous amount of work that he did, and now everyone has access to his work, and everyone will have access to all these Shiksha texts. And so Maharshi's system of reading the Vedic literature will be available in more complete form to everyone for absolute enlightenment of the whole world. Please welcome our great yogic flyer and great Vedic scholar, Dr. Peter Freund. Jai Gurudev.
Thank you, and welcome to this evening's full moon celebration. We want to begin with some words that were spoken at the inauguration of the Patanjali Golden Dome on January 12, 1980. And these words were spoken by Stephen Hoffman, the foreman of the construction crew.
Just one more thing. I hope everybody starts floating real soon in our Golden Dome. It's really good.
Ever since Maharishi introduced yogic flying to America on the Good Morning America show and then later on the Merv Griffin show in December 1978, we've been hearing about three stages of yogic flying. Stage one is hopping on foam, stage two is floating, and stage three is flying through the air at will. It has been about 40 years since yogic flying started on six-month courses for governors in Switzerland. There have been hundreds of millions of hops in the Golden Domes. The goal has always been much more than hopping a few feet. We want to be free of gravity. We want to really fly. Remarkably, even a little of this freedom gives enormous bliss. Let's listen to Maharishi describe the bliss of flying. This is an excerpt from press conferences that were made between 2002 and 2007. And there's about, here we go.
And finally, Maharishi, while we're on the subject of deep knowledge, this is a question, a simple, innocent question that's come up before, and that is, why meditation creates bliss. In the news conference I watched last week, Maharishi said that yogic flying creates an upsurge of bliss within the practitioner. And throughout the ages, meditation has been called the key to true happiness. But the inner nature of life, as Maharishi said, is a flat, abstract, unmanifest field that is devoid of all qualities, heat and cold and pleasure and pain. So why is it that meditation creates feelings of happiness rather than feelings of nothing at all?
The thing is, the feeling is just like a prisoner being released, someone who was in the prison for so long. Now he's being released. What a bliss to him. All the time our body is attracted by the, what we call, gravity. Body is drawn in. And when one puts the sutra of the flying sutra, one is released of that dependence on gravity. So it's a release from gravity. It's such a joy, million times bigger joy than the prisoner being released. The prisoner being released is just an example to show that when he is under suppression, he is no more himself and all kinds of agony and all that. But when he is released, the big, huge opening from all those restrictions and all, exactly million times more, when the body is brought in freedom from the gravity, then the body rejoices that huge bliss. It is freed from the clutches of the bondage of attraction to some other power. Gravity, power of gravity, is holding the freedom of life back to itself, it draws in. And when the body lifts up, when the body rises above gravity, it's a big blaze rising. That is the explanation we can give in short, huh? There is a word, I think it's common everywhere, mind over matter. Is that the thing? Generally, the matter keeps the mind within boundaries, boundaries of space and time. I see like that, here, and the taste and touch and all. It's all within boundaries. And boundaries are freed. One sees far beyond the eyes can see. One hears far beyond the ears can hear. So we can not only say that is the reality. One goes beyond the boundaries, one goes beyond the bounds, one goes into freedom. That's how we look at it, huh? It's a beautiful question.
We want to be free of gravity. We want to be able to float. It's a natural and universal desire to be able to be free, no longer tied down to the earth by the force of gravity. What restricts this goal from becoming a living reality? Can we find ways to enhance the speed of evolution so that the possibility of floating and flying is more quickly actualized? Can floating become a part of our lives? What are the obstacles to living infinite affluence, unboundedness in daily life through yogic flying? Why not live life on the level of the goal of yogic flying? In this talk, and in the months to come this spring, we're going to look at floating from many different angles. We will see floating actualized in the lives of saints. We will relive the historical record of space flights through the universe. We will examine the origin of yogic flying and the technologies for harnessing silence and the principle of least action for effortless motion in space. Finally, we'll explore the cosmic nature of man and the Vedic origins of the universe in order to understand clearly why yogic flying, in its advanced stages, not just hopping, is a realistic aspiration for every individual. We hope that the knowledge presented here will help crystallize the vision of unlimited potential for affluence of life through yogic flying, and will present a picture of floating as a realistic aspiration based on a clear understanding of yogic flying as an outcome of the development of perfect health, and also as an engine for the development and maintenance of perfect health and long life without the degrading and debilitating effects of old age. Yogic flying is a priceless treasure, even in the initial stages of the practice. The advanced levels represent further milestones of perfect health and ability to fulfill desires, measuring growth towards supreme enlightenment and providing a technology for raising the level of consciousness and creating coherence in the environment at the same time. The glories of yogic flying are endless. Let's start at the beginning. Unboundedness, universality, is located in that integrated state of awareness known as transcendental consciousness, or samadhi in Sanskrit. this unique state of consciousness is the only state of consciousness which harnesses the total brain functioning. The total brain functions in transcendental consciousness, and Maharshi explains that once and for all, there is no other way, and there will never be any other way to experience total brain functioning other than transcendental consciousness, which is easily gained through the effortless, natural practice of the transcendental meditation technique. The TM City program is a technology which harnesses total brain functioning. It takes that level of life, which is completely integrated and universal, and makes it live in life. The total brain functioning during yogic flying is extraordinary. It is not merely alpha channel coherence, as is found in transcendental consciousness during the practice of transcendental meditation. It is total brain coherence on all channels. This maximum integration of brain functioning takes place just before liftoff, when consciousness begins to move the body into the air. This integration of the mind and the body at the point of liftoff during the practice of yogic flying is the maximum level of integration that an individual can experience in his life, a moment of perfect mind-body coherence, a moment of complete integration of life, a moment of perfect health. So now we're going to look at insights into mastery of yogic flying from Maharshi Ayurveda. The relationship of mind and body is exquisitely understood in Maharshi Ayurveda. According to Ayurveda, the cause of all disease and imbalance in life is prajnaparadha, that's mistaken intellect. The mistake of the intellect is the phenomenon where the knower, the I, the personality, sees himself separate from the object, unconnected to the object or the process of knowing the object. So the individual identified with the body experiences a vast multiplicity of objects in his near and far environment and believes these to be non-self, while the body is self. From the perspective of unity consciousness, where oneness, wholeness, universality is the supreme reality, and the experience of objects is a secondary phenomenon within that wholeness, this perception of the body or the knower as separate is a mistake. There is no multiplicity, ultimately. There is only unity, and the perception of diversity is fake. And this fake perception gives rise to all diseases and imbalances in life. So the one universally effective cure of disease is to remove the mistake of the intellect. All the technologies of yoga work to reverse the mistaken intellect by giving the experience of unbounded awareness. The effectiveness of this program of culturing integration of life to alleviate the problems of health is seen in reduced utilization of health care through the practice of the Transcendental Meditation Program. So yoga provides one angle of creating perfect health by removing prajnaparadha. While yoga works to reverse the mistaken intellect on the level of consciousness, Ayurveda works to reverse the mistake of the intellect on the level of the body by bringing the three doshas, vata, pitta, and kapha, into a state of perfect balance. Consciousness can be made pure and the mistake of the intellect eliminated. According to Ayurveda, the physiology is made up of five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and space, called akash. When the intellect is identified with multiplicity in the state of prajnaparadha, then the space element called Akash in Sanskrit, which is ultimately responsible for the structure of the whole creation, is hidden from awareness and plays a more subdued role in the physiology. Akash means literally space, but the space in the body becomes a functional element with changing values or qualities when we understand space in terms of its function to relate different elements that lie within a matrix. If elements, say, in different parts of the brain function independently without knowledge or connection with things going on in other parts of the brain, then the space quality is weak. There is very little correlation between the functioning parts. If the brain could become transparent, as if, so that one impulse anywhere would become an impulse everywhere, then the space or Akash quality would be increased. When this increased value of Akash is so much maximized that every point is completely aware of what is happening at every other point, then a state of infinite correlation has been reached. This infinite correlation is a state of complete integration of the parts with the whole, a state of unity and universality in which the mistake of the intellect is completely eliminated. This state of infinite correlation is achieved at the moment of liftoff of the body during yogic flying. It is this experience of infinite correlation which spontaneously promotes balance of the doshas so that they become exquisitely balanced, even for a moment, and the value of Akash begins to shine more and more in the physiology. The growth of consciousness and the refinement of the physical structure in the direction of increasing dominance of the more abstract elements go hand in hand. Yogic flying is a technique to rapidly accelerate the growth to enlightenment because of its effect of refining the elements of the body in the direction of more Akash element. As Sultan Sala says, it must be that the pulse of advanced, long-term yogic flyers has some distinguishing quality, something more than just the presence of balance or the togetherness of the doshas, or even of ojas. It is the increased levels of the subtlest mahabhuta, that means subtlest element, Akash, which I've seen, Sultan says, consistently in the pulses of experienced yogic flyers. Beyond the qualities of sweetness, evenness, and softness of ojas, Akash has a quality of silence and sattva. The inner experience of pure consciousness manifests in the pulse in a tangible, unmistakable way. So this is a way of saying that the matrix or lattice of space in which all the parts of the body function becomes as if transparent, so that every part of the body functions in complete accordance with every other part. An impulse anywhere is an impulse everywhere, and the function of the entire physiology is spontaneously balanced. Here we have a vision how yogic flying removes mistaken intellect and creates a state of complete integration of mind and body in unity consciousness. We can equate these two themes, the expansion of the Akash element in the physiology through the experience of infinite correlation in the practice of yogic flying, and the process of elimination of pragyaparat in Maharishi Ayurveda. Both elevate life to the state of perfection in unity consciousness. This means that we can take a very practical view towards the advices of Maharishi Ayurveda with regard to health. All the technologies of Maharishi Ayurveda which promote balance will in turn increase the bubbling bliss of yogic flying. Conversely,
all the habits which are discouraged in Maharishi Ayurveda, such as maintaining night vigil, eating improper food, activities which diminish ojas, all these will make the body heavier, will retard the speed of evolution, and make yogic flying less successful. In particular, the improperly digested or incompletely digested food called ama in Ayurveda obstructs the channels or sortases in the physiology, making the physiology duller, more lethargic, and less responsive to the impulses of the mind. Ama must be reduced in order for the akash element to be increased or glorified. Ama can be reduced with proper diet and with panchakarma treatment. Panchakarma is purificatory procedures usually applied in the context of a week-long in-house clinical treatment program. The practice of yogi flying should be complemented by following an ideal daily routine with the advice of trained experts in the Maharishi Ayurveda Rejuvenation and Health Program, and by eating a balanced diet according to the principles of Maharishi Ayurveda, and making maximum use of all the different modalities of Maharishi Ayurveda. When discussing the culture of Akash in the physiology through proper diet, daily routine, and practice of yogic flying, one feature of daily routine is of paramount importance, and that is the bedtime. Transformation of the physiology in the direction of increasing Akash element in the tissues requires the rebuilding of the tissues. Now, tissues are being constantly rebuilt anyway. And now the culture of the physiology gives an evolutionary direction to the change that is built into the system. Ayurveda makes a detailed study of this process of formation of the tissues and finds that crucial parts of the process of forming and completing the formation of the dhatus, or tissues, takes place when the body is asleep, particularly in the hours before midnight. Thus, an early bedtime gives the body more time to carry out these particular strategic tasks in the formation of the dhatus, such that an early bedtime has a reinvigorating rasayana effect on the physiology. As a bare minimum, getting to sleep by 10 p.m. is necessary. And from the Vedic literature, it says, proper sleep brings about happiness and longevity in human beings in the same way that real knowledge brings about siddhis in a yogi. And Lise Matik explains, being asleep by 10 p.m. at night guarantees that one's body channels will be naturally cleansed by the body itself, which is crucial for the complete formation of body tissues and achieving the final and most refined product of digestion and metabolism, ojas, the vitality and immunity factor. All the imbalances, emotional, mental, physical, that human beings have are due to lack of ojas, misplaced ojas, or impure ojas. Unfortunately, unless one is asleep by 10 p.m. at night, the human physiology is not capable of producing the full amount of ojas, one anjali, that needs to be circulating in the body so that one could enjoy a good state of health. Going to bed on time is the one advice of Maharishi Ayurveda which is easiest to implement and completely inexpensive. In the context of culturing the nervous system for the experience of higher states of consciousness and increased success in yogic flying, it's also important to mention the paramount importance of pure food, pure water, and pure air. This concludes our look into Maharishi Ayurveda with regard to insights into mastery of yogic flying. And what we've learned is that the benefit in terms of growth of
that spiritual content of life, wholeness of life that takes place with yogic flying is something tangible that can actually be measured through Maharshi Ayurveda. And also there are techniques from the side of Maharshi Ayurveda that can culture the physiology and speed this process. Not from the field of Shiksha. Shiksha is one of the six Vedangas, or limbs of the Veda. As Dr. Fred Travis explains in his book, Your Brain is a River, Not a Rock, a human being starts life with a full complement of brain cells, but the brain doesn't come pre-wired. It has to be wired by experience and by education. As a child grows, he expands his territory of influence and learns about the larger world around him. Beyond his home, there's the community, the county, the state, the nation, and the whole world. There's the world of so many billion human beings, and the world of animals, insects, and microbes, and the worlds of molecules, atoms, and fine particles. Learning about each level of life, he becomes a so-called informed citizen and takes his place in the community. In this process, aided and abetted by the Western educational system from kindergarten to PhD, the student gains enormous amounts of information about different levels of existence, but he does not learn to use his total brain. Learning total brain functioning is not part of the curriculum. In the educational system of ancient India, by contrast, all the focus is on training the student to use his total brain. The system of education chronicled in a group of about 108 texts, collectively called Shiksha, is completely focused on teaching the student how to use his total brain potential. So in both the Eastern and Western systems of education, there is a quality of expansion as the growing student moves from localized perceptions of physical objects to increasingly broadened awareness of the whole range of time and space. However, in the Western paradigm of education, this expansion is brought about by putting more and more information in the container of knowledge, whereas in the Shiksha, or Vedic paradigm, this expansion is the expansion of the container of knowledge itself, the individual consciousness expanding to universality. Maharshi paints a stark contrast between these two systems of education. He says that English education is poison. Vedic education is nectar. And he explains that the whole of the Vedic knowledge is available to everyone in one syllable, ah. And ah, he explains, is there in every expression. Every expression of Vedic literature has ah in it. This is the speciality about the perfection of the Vedic word. If you speak Sanskrit, if you speak Vedic language, you have to say ah in each syllable. In each alphabet, whether you say ka, ka, ga, gha, anything you say, ah is there. And when ah is there, wholeness of knowledge is there in a lively flow. Anyone who says anything in Sanskrit, what is he doing? He is enlivening consciousness, self-referral consciousness. He is enlivening Atma. On the surface, Shiksha deals with the pronunciation of the Vedic texts. The student learns to pronounce the text correctly. With continuing Vedic recitation and, at the same time, yogic practices learned from the mouth of the master, the student cultures the ability to project the impulse of speech from the finest, most tender level of feeling, from a level called Ritam Pada Prajna, a level which knows only truth. On this level of pure intelligence, whatever impulse is entertained is seen for its true nature. The form of the name appears on that level of consciousness as on a television screen. By culturing the facility to think from the level of Ritampara-pragya, the student becomes accustomed to experiencing the fulfillment of every desire. This is how individual consciousness expands to universality through training. The growing ability to think from the level of Ritampara-pragya and experience the fulfillment of the impulse projected corresponds to an expansion of consciousness. This is the quality of expansion in Shiksha. This expanded consciousness takes in the total brain physiology, and the process of manifesting the form of an impulse, or richa, harnesses the total brain physiology for the fulfillment of the desire. In this way, the student is systematically trained to use his total brain and to enjoy complete fulfillment of every impulse of thought, speech, and action, and to always move from success to success to success, always completely fulfilled with the manifestation of the fruits of action. This quality of expansion, which takes in the total field of natural law for the fulfillment of every desire, is the origin of the practice of yogic flying. In yogic flying, the student makes use of these same dynamics of the fulfillment of desire by harnessing total natural law. Awareness expands more and more with the bubbling bliss of yogic flying, and the student gets in the habit of using his total brain and harnessing the total potential of natural law for every impulse of thought and action. There is a path of development whereby the student learns how an impulse takes in the total field of natural law, collapsing through the eight values of prakriti into the gap, the dynamism of anyonya-apada, and then coming up again through the eight values of prakriti into the manifest form of the desired object. This systematic knowledge of the dynamics of fulfillment of desire through expression of the Vedas with perfect pronunciation, harnessing the eight somersaults of natural law collapsing into the gap, and the eight somersaults of natural law emerging from the silence of the gap, is expounded in the texts of Shiksha. Reading the texts of Shiksha in Sanskrit is a technology for expansion of awareness, a technique for enlivening the fine mechanics of fulfillment of natural law by utilizing the flow of natural law in the unmanifest, the sequential flow of natural law in the Veda. This is very profound knowledge of Maharishi Vedic science, and we will explore this in greater depth in another session because it will take about an hour to do justice to the knowledge of Shiksha as a platform for growth to advanced stages of yogic flying. For now, we would like to examine the testimony of one important Shiksha, which explicitly states the crucial role of Shiksha in the awakening of awareness, and that's Kala Nirnaya Shiksha. And in the first verse, the text says that the awakening of consciousness, totality, Brahman, is the goal that is reached by the study of Shiksha. Now the word for totality of consciousness is Veda Tattva. Veda Tattva means that being, that isness, that essence of the Veda. And the essence of the Veda, we know from the ritual Akshayali verse, is that transcendental akasha, which is pure consciousness, which is the self. And it's that self, that value of the self, which is the basis of the Veda, that's enlivened, that's awakened by the study of Shiksha. We generally think we have a monopoly on this understanding of the importance of consciousness. But interestingly enough, there was a commentary on this Kala Nirnaya Shiksha, and the commentator basically says the same thing. He says, the goal in view is the complete perfection of knowledge of the unbounded being. The grasping of the self, he says, is the motive or design that is made evident in the phrase, the awakening of the essence of the Veda, totality, Brahman, is the goal. The commentator continues, Shiksha texts are spoken of obliquely to make the point that this study is not directed towards the grasping of the Shiksha texts because exertion in that direction would not be fruitful. What remains as an object of study is the exploration of the unmanifest fullness of the self for all its different values. This commentary supports our own view that reading the texts of Shiksha in Sanskrit is a technology for expansion of consciousness. So now, technology permitting, let's recite with Vivek Vaidyanathan, who is MA and doctoral student in Maharshi Vedic Science, and we'll recite the first two verses of Kala Nirnaya Shiksha. And for that, you need to all help by doing the refrain, and you should be able to read.
Kala Nirnaya Shiksha.
Kala Nirnaya Shiksha.
Pratishakhyadi Shastrani.
Pratishakhyadi Shastrani.
Pratishakhyadi Shastrani.
Pratishakhyadi Shastrani.
Maya Vikshya Yathamati.
Maya Vikshya Yathamati.
Maya Vikshya Yathamati.
Maya Vikshya Yathamati.
Veda Tattva Bodhartam.
Veda Tattva Bodhartam.
Veda Tattva Bodhartam.
Veda Tattva Bodhartam.
Iha Kalo Nirupyate.
Iha Kalo Nirupyate.
Iha Kalo Nirupyate.
Iha Kalo Nirupyate.
Akhanda Varna Vishayo.
Akhanda Varna Vishayo.
Akhanda Varna Vishayo.
Akhanda Varna Vishayo.
Varnansha Vishayo Picha.
Varnansha Vishayo Picha.
Varnansha Vishayo Picha.
Varnansha Vishayo Picha.
Virama Vishayascheti.
Virama Vishayascheti.
Virama Vishayascheti.
Virama Vishayascheti.
Trividha Kala Uchyate.
Trividha Kala Uchyate.
Trividha Kala Uchyate.
Kala Uchyate.
Kala Nirnaya Shiksha.
Kala Nirnaya Shiksha.
Pratishakhyadi Shastrani Maya Vikshya Yathamati.
Pratishakhyadi Shastrani Maya Vikshya Yathamati.
Veda Tattva Bodhartam Iha Kalo Nirupyate.
Veda Tattva Bodhartam Iha Kalo Nirupyate.
Akhanda Varna Vishayo Varnansha Vishayo Picha.
Akhanda Varna Vishayo Varnansha Vishayo Picha.
Virama Vishayascheti Trividha Kala Uchyate.
Virama Vishayascheti Trividha Kala Uchyate. Shiksha is the discipline of Vedic science devoted to unfolding the infinite latent potential within every individual. Making use of the knowledge contained in Shiksha by reading the 108 texts of Shiksha in Sanskrit will greatly aid the systematic unfoldment of the full potential of every human being through the practice of yogic flying. Now insights into mastery of yogic flying from Sthapachaved. Another technology that comes to us from the Vedic literature is found in the Shaivite Agamas, a branch of Sthapachaved. There are 28 Shaivite Agamas, and Dr. Tony Nader has correlated these Agamas with the 28 joints in the body. The 28 levels of joint motility, which provide wide-angle bending to the human body. According to Dr. Tony Nader, Agama is a part of Sthapatya Veda which deals with sculpture, particularly how to make a sculpture or statue come to life. The Agamas are extensive texts, often 800 or even 1200 pages in length. This knowledge of Agama can be understood from our viewpoint as the systematic knowledge of how to establish the intelligence of total natural law in the objective mechanical structure of each joint. The Agama teaches how to bring each joint to life, how to preserve its functioning without deterioration or aging, and especially how to behave in accordance with the principle of least action. That means doing less and accomplishing more. Because on the level of the omnipresent unified field of natural law, the intention of movement is naturally fulfilled without much or without any action or without any expenditure of energy. This branch of Vedic science has a total knowledge of the intelligence which underlies every possible movement in space, how the body can be transported through space with least effort, with least expenditure of energy. When every joint functions with the support of total natural law, then the body as a whole gains the ability to move by mere intention. The intention stirs the unified field, and the infinite organizing power of the unified field carries out the intention without any expenditure of energy, without any motion needed. This is another angle of understanding how floating and flying through the air is possible. It is possible because the intelligence of total natural law is already available within every joint. And when that intelligence is enlivened, then the body moves by mere intention. We will explore also the knowledge of Agama and its relation to the fulfillment of the goals of yogic flying in a future session. For now, in order to get a taste of the knowledge contained in these Agamas, we will recite again with Vivek Vajranathan the beginning verses of the first of the 28 Agamas, the Kamikagama. And here we won't be doing as much repetition.
Kamikagama.
Kamikagama.
Purvabhaga.
Purvabhaga.
Tantravatara Patala.
Tantravatara Patala.
Kailasa Dakshine Shringe Nana Sharya Samanvite.
Kailasa Dakshine Shringe Nana Sharya Samanvite.
Pravritta Vatavriksho Thachaya Channe Divistrute.
Pravritta Vatavriksho Thachaya Channe Divistrute.
व्याघ्र चर्म परिधाने पीठे रत्नो पशोभिते
व्याघ्र चर्म परिधाने पीठे रत्नो पशोभिते
देवदान वगंधर्व सिद्ध विद्याधरादिभि
देवदान वगंधर्व सिद्ध विद्याधरादिभि
सेव्यमानं महादेवं श्रीकंठं विश्वनायकं
सेव्यमानं महादेवं श्रीकंठं विश्वनायकं
कौशिक काश्यपो गस्त्यो गौतमो नारदस्तथा
कौशिक काश्यपो गस्त्यो गौतमो नारदस्तथा
सनत्कुमारस् सनकस्सनातनसनन्दनौ
सनत्कुमारस् सनकस्सनातनसनन्दनौ
भृगुश्चात्रिभरद्वाज वसिष्ठाद्या महर्षयः
भृगुश्चात्रिभरद्वाज वसिष्ठाद्या महर्षयः
जिज्ञासवः परं ज्ञानं शिवशक्तिं मुखीकृताः
jignasava param jnanam shiva shakyun mukhi krita
pranam yacharanam tasya prahurisha mumapatim
pranam yacharanam tasya prahurisha mumapatim. So this completes our sojourn into the contributions to yogic flying from Stapa Jivet, and what we've learned is that there is a field where we can learn to make every action, every move of the body be a move of the silence of pure consciousness. Before we leave the area of Sanskrit, we want to consider for a moment the influence of language. Languages arise in different parts of the world under the influence of different geographical and climatic conditions. The language originally spoken in a particular area is closely allied with the natural laws in that area, such that the relationship between name and form, between a word and its meaning in that specific language, is nourished by the natural laws in that area. In the 7,000 regions of the world where a traditional local language is being spoken by native peoples of that area, there is a very close, intimate relationship between the spoken language, the physiology of the native peoples, and the natural laws of the area. If the people of these 7,000 language groups learn transcendental meditation in TM cities, they'll have, according to Maharishi, much greater success in the practice of the Flying Sutra, because through speaking their native language, their nervous systems grow up much more finely, more closely tuned to the natural laws of the region. At the opposite end of the spectrum is English. English is actually a composite language made up of Old English and Old French. When the Normans invaded England, I think this was about 1000 AD, and took over the government, they brought their language and imposed it on the population. But the population adapted by merely adding the vocabulary of the Norman language to their own. So a language developed that had two words for every object, one from Old French and one from the Germanic language, Old English. And you see here so many pairs of words where you're familiar that both of them mean pretty much the same thing: ghost, phantom, smell, odor, hue, color, blossom, flower, like that. Over time, the connection of the words with their original contributing languages was lost, and a new language was formed which melded the two together. However, the laws of nature for the two languages are quite different, and the mechanics of connecting the sound with the form are not at all the same. Thus, in speaking modern English, the mind is constantly switching back and forth between two different paradigms of relationship between sound and meaning. This means that more effort is required to speak in English than in other languages. And Maharishi said that Vyakaran actually is capable of measuring the amount of effort that's involved in connecting the name with the form in any particular language. In Sanskrit, Maharishi explains there is wholeness of knowledge flowing because the seed of total knowledge is there in every syllable. And wherever there is wholeness of knowledge flowing, there is the entirety of the power of action flowing with it. Therefore, speaking Sanskrit is a technology to harness the total potential of natural law. So Maharishi concludes, start to speak Sanskrit, teach Sanskrit to the children,
I would not speak anything about other languages, but if you want to enliven infinite creative intelligence from whatever you speak, from whatever you do, then you'll take care of your language. Sanskrit is a language whereby you can enliven your creativity. You can enliven positivity. Here is a way to enliven infinite creative intelligence from whatever you speak. Sanskrit is a language whereby you can enliven creativity and positivity. Reading and listening to Sanskrit is a technology which English speakers can use to overcome or at least counterbalance the strain which the brain undergoes in speaking and understanding English. Everyone should read or listen to Sanskrit being recited at least 20 minutes to 30 minutes every day. This is a necessity in order to give the brain a rest from the constant challenge of interpreting the English language. This will help to give life to the TM City program. And now briefly, some insights into the mastery of yogic flying from yoga. The TM City program is a technology in the field of yoga designed to make the unmanifest transcendental field live in life. The silent unmanifest is the root of the whole universe. When we transcend during the practice of transcendental meditation, we are opening our awareness to the basic value of the whole diverse universe. That means in transcendental consciousness, you have in your awareness, in a lively manner, the infinite creative potential of the universe. The infinite creative power of the universe is lively in your awareness. In order to actualize that creative potential of total natural law, the infinite creative power of the universe in our individual lives, we need to directly experience the source of all manifestations, the transcendental being. That is the inescapable role of the transcendental meditation program. To make that infinite creative power work for us in our lives, to make it functional, then we practice the TM City program. The TM City program provides so many channels for the expression of the infinite organizing power of natural law to flow into all the different aspects of our individual lives. It makes the transcendental body function in life. Having owned the infinite evolutionary power of the universe in our awareness through the practice of transcendental meditation, we put it to function. That means we harness that infinite organizing power and make it work for us in our individual lives through the TM City program. There is another modality of yoga which is extremely important, the field of yoga asanas. Maharshi yoga asanas are a special procedure for bringing about the dhyan of unboundedness, the dhyaning of the infinite creative power of the universe in our individual lives. By the attention alternating between holding the posture easily and comfortably and then letting go, one experiences the dhyan of unboundedness increasingly flowing into practical life. Unboundedness, absolute being, dawns in its reality to the field of the intellect. From there it dawns to the mind. From there it dawns to the senses. From there to the whole field of behavior. And from there, the infinite creative potential of the universe dawns in the environment. It's a very sequentially ordered situation brought about by the movement of attention. Yoga asanas are an absolutely vital bridge between the abstract experience of the transcendent and the whole field of practical life. Everyone should practice the asanas twice daily at the golden times of the day, whether they're a meditator, a siddha, a governor, a TM city administrator, or a raja. This is an essential technology to make the siddhis live in life, and this provides everyone a firm foundation for enjoying the bubbling bliss of yogic flying, whether in the first, second, or the third stages. So now we're going to make a very quick summary of the contributions of Maharshi Vedic science to mastery of yogic flying. We've been talking about the contributions of various branches of Maharshi Vedic science to floating, the second stage of yogi flying. hopping, as we see in so many videos and photographs of yogic flying, is not actually the predicted result of yogic flying. The prediction, Maharshi says, is akasha gamanam. Akasha gamanam, moving through space, is a phrase that literally means space travel. In hopping, the body rises up all right, but then the body comes back down. This is an infant state of the process. It's an infant state, but from the side of the technique, it is already sufficient to harness total natural law and to give the experience of bubbling bliss and total brain functioning. So it is a good first step, a marvelous first step, a really enjoyable practice in its own right that benefits practical life in manifold ways. But it's not the ultimate goal. And here we are, after all, meeting in the name of the ultimate flying club. What do we need really for the second stage flying, where the body remains in the air as if free from the tug of gravity? First, we need to experience the field of pure silence, the unmanifest source of creation, what Dr. John Hagen has called the unified field of all the laws of nature. This we do systematically and effortlessly with the Transcendental Meditation Program. Second, we need to make that silence functional. We need to learn to make the silence move in waves of silence, so that every impulse of thought is a wave, an expression of that pure, unbounded silence. This we do with the TM City Program. Third, with the help of Shiksha, we can make every expression in speech be the expression of silence, the expression of total natural law in the unmanifest. Fourth, with the help of the Staphatyaved Agamas, we can establish deep, profound silence of total natural law in every movement, in every action that we take. All these four, the experience of the transcendent and the experience of unmanifest silence flowing in impulses of thought, in expressions of speech, and in the dynamism of daily activity, are on the basis of transformation of the physiology. The body changes dramatically to support the advanced experience of yogic flying. The doshas coming into balance is one measure of growth of silence in the physiology. Ojas is a chemical which stands at the junction between the individual physiology and the universal cosmic law. Ojas needs to be plentiful and of a highly refined character in order to sustain the body in the air in second stage flying. This state of complete self-sufficiency, complete self-referral, where the awareness of bliss, the awareness of totality, is not challenged or weakened by relative perceptions. This state of complete self-sufficiency and silence of the physiology is brought about by fullness of ojas. In a recent full moon celebration here at MUM, experts in Maharshi Ayurveda pulse diagnosis measured the levels of ojas in the pulses of all those present at the celebration. Every person's level of ojas was ranked on a scale from 1 to 4, with 1 being unusually low, 2 being so-called normal, and 4 being the highest score characteristic of an individual living higher states of consciousness. The average score for about 150 subjects, almost all siddhas for many years, was 2.59 out of a possible 4. This score indicates a very good state of health, but at the same time, it is clear that there is still a long ways to go, collectively, to reach the level of perfection of physiology. The level of akash in the pulse can also be evaluated. Silence is not a mood. It is not just the absence of thought. It is a profound alignment with total natural law. And this alignment is reflected in progressive refinement of the physiology, even over a period of years. And this growth of silence in the physiology is not only experiential, it is also measurable objectively through Maharshi pulse diagnosis. The health and vitality of siddhas is increasing year by year. We are imbibing and assimilating silence in our physiologies more and more, but it has not yet reached the level that is needed to begin second stage vayana. The contribution to mastery of yogic flying of all these areas of Maharshi Vedic science is to strengthen and make more profound, more vivid, the experience of pure, unmanifest silence. Now we've seen the value of the silence of being going through these different channels of Maharshi Vedic science. Now we're ready to examine with Maharshi the five mechanics of stepping on to the advanced stages of yogic flying. Let's listen to Maharshi speak on the role of silence in developing mastery of yogic flying. Maharshi explains in the following talk, called Mastery of Yogic Flying, that there is actually nothing preventing us from being up in the air.
The Transcendental Meditation Program, Advanced Lecture Collection. Introduction to Maharshi Vedic Science. Mastery of Yogic Flying. August 16th, 2006, Lodra Pond.
A bit of time yet remains. If you would like, there are a few questions from the press that I think are quite timely. Some in to do with the practical steps of implementing invincibility in every country. But here's perhaps a question first that comes up quite a lot these days, because the press is taking greater and greater interest in this phenomenon of yogic flying. The very name, yogic flying, instantly captures the attention. I don't think anyone can hear the name of this powerful technique and not stop to wonder what is this phenomenon of yogic flying? So this question comes to Maharshi from the press. Maharshi speaks often about yogic flying and its ability to create invincible nations. In that context, Maharshi has said that the first stage of yogic flying, as it is practiced today, which appears on the surface to look like hopping, indicates some mastery over natural law, some mastery over gravity. My question for Maharshi is this: what would it take for people to demonstrate complete mastery over natural law and actually fly through the air during yogic flying? Is it simply a matter of practice makes perfect? Or does the stress and suffering that still exists in the world today prevent individuals from fully mastering yogic flying?
The influence of the environment had a great meaning, had a great effect, but there could come a time that people would like to actually fly, actually be up in the air. Nothing to stop them, only programming that is constantly becoming familiar with those impulses of consciousness which are yogic flying. Yoga means do less and accomplish more. You start from the field of yoga, and you start from the field of yoga means your own mind in the united state, collecting all possible avenues of flying. Yogic flying is not the birds flying, it's not anything else that is flying, it's not the clouds that are flying, it's the yogic flying. And yogic means you do less and accomplish more. You hold the creativity, and then that conducts your action. hold to the basic creativity, self-referral consciousness, and then that self-referral consciousness becomes the technique of accomplishing the purpose. You accomplish the purpose. It's like you are playing a kite, you draw the kite to yourself, and you make the kite rise high. So when you work from a lesser dynamism, when you work from more silence, then you propagate or you promote more activity, more dynamism. So the dynamism is proportional to the inside, drawn in silence, that is yogic. You do the yoga and you do the promotion for action. Yogic flying, the flying that is promoted by the mind drawn in. Mind drawn in, and that promotes action outside. That is yogic action. Thereby, one trains the mind to function in the unmanifest. Inside is transcendental consciousness, and that is unmanifest. So stabilized in the unmanifest, and one is stabilizing the art of action. Yoga is an art of action. Then you can act remaining silent, you act from silence of your mind, you act silence of your intellect, you act silence of your ego, you act from the self, and then everything in the field of action you can accomplish at any level. This is yogic flying. Nothing is impossible in the field of flying. There are records in the Vedic literature about individuals flying, actually flying. Individuals going to this galaxy, this galaxy, this galaxy, here, there. So the record is there, and the possibility is there, because silence is all pervading. Silence is all pervading. And therefore, it is easy for the mind to settle down on that level of silence and perform anything in the field of infinity. Because it is so. There is nothing curious about it. Because it is so, yoga, your digestive state, is a field of unity consciousness, and it's a field of silence, only silence. And silence is all pervading. Everywhere is silence, silence everywhere. Anywhere we see any field of activity, this activity is like a wave in the silent ocean. So silence is everywhere, silence is everywhere, and therefore it is possible for any mind to be able to function from its own level, self-referral level, and then self-referral activity will accomplish anything that is desired. There is a section of performance in the Vedic literature, yajñas. Yajñas are performed. And how their effect is produced? By means of sankalpa. Sankalpa is you resolve, a resolution. You make a resolution, you are going to do this. You make a resolution, you are going to cure the fever of some person like that. And what do you do for that? You do some mitzvahs, but you settle down in yourself first. Get to the silent level which connects you and the person. On the level of silence, all persons are related one to each other. And those who practice this thing, they do the mantras or the different Vedic recitations with a resolution that this effect of Vedic recitation has to go and cure the temperature of that person now today, this thing or this thing, or remove the cough of that man or whatever. So it is through resolution and the technique of silencing the mind, silencing the mind, then you are yogic. That means you are performing for the field of the unified field. And unified field is a universally present field everywhere. And therefore, you can shoot an arrow from that field and the arrow will go wherever you target it. It's very simple to understand. Very simple to understand. And now, that the teachers of transcendental meditation and the effect of yogic flying and all is available in every country. In what a small country it is not yet available, it will be made available very soon. And training of these experts in invincibility, we call it these days. Invincibility is a name referring to the possible effect. Transcendental meditation is a name of the process. But the process can touch the target of it, invincibility. This is how we are going to make every nation invincible, and every nation invincible means permanent state of world peace. This has started recently with evidence in Holland, evidence in US, and now almost every week some country will show up this evidence of national consciousness rising to invincibility. It's a great thing to enjoy. It's a very great thing for the world just to enjoy, for everyone to enjoy now, see? So send the press and we'll talk to them next week.
Just another subject that's very important in this context, the power of superradiance. See if we can get through this very quickly. Counterbalancing the dragging influence of collective consciousness is very easy because of the enormous power of orderliness and coherence that is spontaneously radiated throughout the environment during the practice of yogic flying. The influence of orderliness that radiates from a single individual accessing the unified field above the laws of nature is multiplied manifold when the performance is by a group practicing yogic flying together under one roof. That greatly increased influence is called super radiance. And the power of the radiance of one individual is multiplied by the square of the number of people practicing together. The effect is n squared. 100 people flying together create an influence equal to 100 squared, or 10,000 individual units of coherence. That means the equivalent of 10,000 people practicing separately in their own homes. Maharshi explains that the consequence of the super radiance effect works in both directions, powerfully impacting the surrounding environment and at the same time transforming the experience of each siddha. Each siddha experiences his own practice to be 100 times as deep and penetrating as when he practices on his own. This means that the influence of enlightenment of the Akash element in the physiology is 100 times as great when practiced in a group of 100. This means that the transformation of the physiology into increased and expanded values of Akash proceeds with 100 times the momentum and power as when the individual practices alone. The single engine of individual evolution is boosted 100-fold, and the growth in higher states of consciousness, the development of increasingly pure values of health, and the accumulation of supportive nature for success in every avenue of activity is accelerated 100-fold. The power that is created by the group for individual evolution and simultaneously for the environment is tremendous. This is the supreme blessing of this advanced yogic practice. Maharshi has said that there's no higher dharma than to be part of a large creating coherence group. There is no greater path for one's individual evolution, nor for the evolution of the society as a whole, than to practice the TM City program in yogic flying in large groups. Nothing that we can do in our individual lives has the chance of boosting our pace of individual evolution by a factor of 100, or 1,000, or more. Individual evolution can be turbocharged by participating in a large, coherence creating group. All that one can ever desire in terms of expansion of happiness and bliss in life, in terms of enjoying perfect balance and perfect health and long, problem-free life, and in terms of enjoying full support of nature for all one's own initiatives and activities and personal affairs, can be completely attained by maximizing the growth of the abstract, all-supporting, and all-nourishing Akash value in the physiology, which takes place spontaneously when one participates in the practice of yogic flying in a large group. This is a formula for rapid individual enlightenment, national invincibility, and world harmony. Let's all come together, 2,000 strong, in the golden domes of Fairfield to take maximum advantage of this wonderful gift of God to man, yogic flying. As a last stroke, we have a unity chart, which is a habit in classes at Maharshi University of Management. On the surface, what we have seen in Maharshi's yogi flying is just hopping on foam. The deeper understanding is that the physiology is being transformed in the direction of increased ojas and increasing values of Akash element in the physiology. Transcendental consciousness. At the moment before liftoff, there is maximum coherence in brain functioning across all channels of EEG as the individual experiences perfect mind-body integration. Wholeness moving within itself. When the doshas are balanced, the ojas is maximum. The Akash element is dominating in the physiology. Pragya Parad is completely eliminated, and thought is spontaneously projected from the level of Ritambhara Pragya. Then, sustained flights in the air will be inevitable. Thank you very much.
Dev, we'd like to thank you all very much for coming tonight. It was wonderful to get a
a glimpse of all possibilities like that from our great expert in yogic flying, Dr. Freund, and would like to invite you all to join Dr. Freund, join us in the yogic flying ring in the Kollin Dome to create that vision of yogic flying that we saw from the Purusha, in the video Dr. Freund showed us, to create that once again in the Kollin Domes and have this maximum brain coherence at the point of liftoff to be seen more and more often. And this is a gateway, as our TMCT administrator explains, a gateway to the advanced stages of yogic flying. The first stage, the liftoff, often, lifting off often. So thank you very much. It was wonderful to have you again. And good night. Jai Gurudev.